Good day out there in tasty twat land. This is Dan dialing in twat number 47. And I'm going to pick off where Troops left off on his last twat about desktop manager for Windows. And I'm going to take it one step further and talk about one of my personal favorite applications for OS X, desktop manager. Now, once you've tasted virtual desktops, it's almost impossible to go back to just one plain desktop. And Desktop Manager under OS X has been probably the best desktop manager application I've ever tried. The price is right, it's free, and it works phenomenally well. Now, you can get Desktop Manager for OS X from desktopmanager.berlioz.de. The link will be up there in my notes. And if you're running Tiger, the stable version of 5.3 will work, but you got to be aware there's some kind of memory leak or some kind of leak in the application that if you actually look in your console logs when you're running it, is complaining that there's something going on and that performance will be decreased on your system. I don't want to say I really noticed a performance problem, but there is a beta version, which is the 6.60 branch, and that's under development, and that has been phenomenally stable for me. Since I've used that, it's taken care of whatever leak that the OS has been complaining about, and it runs very well. I kind of like it a little better than the 5.3 branch. It seems a little more streamlined for me. Now, using Desktop Manager, you can get any number of desktops, I think, but I generally stick with 8 desktops. I got 4 on the top, 4 on the bottom, and you can configure your hotkeys very easily, you know, like using Apple left, right, up, and down to transition between all your different desktops. Or if you look actually up in the menu or the start bar, whatever you want to call it, at the top of the screen, it'll have your desktops laid out there. You click on them and it'll transition over to them. You can even turn on some fancy transitions if you want, flipping, cube-like effects, fade in, fade out. Some pretty cool OpenGL crap that takes up some system resources but wows people when they see it. So Desktop Manager, truly, truly an application to use. My only complaint about the 0.6 version compared to the 0.53 is that you can't move applications on 0.60 to other desktops like you could on 0.53. For instance, I used to map, was it a Control Apple left or right to move the application to the left, desktop to the left or desktop to the right. That functionality just isn't in 6.0. Hopefully it'll show up in a later release, but you know, you got to sacrifice that. What I found that you have to do is you just minimize the application down to the dock, move to the desktop you want, and maximize it again, you're good to go. Now, in conjunction with Desktop Manager, another application on OS X that I got to give credit and say that if this application is not on there, it kills me. Now, I'm not really much of a point-and-click kind of guy, so there's a sweet application called Quicksilver for OS X, and that's quicksilver.blacktree.com. What I use Quicksilver for is an application launcher. Now, I have it mapped to my key Apple Space, so when I hit Apple Space, I start typing in the application I want to use or a document I want to open, automatically fills it in based upon the letters I'm typing. You'll see a little box open up in the middle of your screen, and underneath that a tray will pop down and it'll start filling in the application. For instance, if I was typing in Firefox, I type in FI and it'll automatically fill in Firefox for me. But if I keep going, you know, it might have another application on there. Firefox probably a bad choice because now I can't think of anything else that starts with an F. Well, if I were typing in F, it'll go in alphabetical order the first couple times you use it, but what it'll actually do is it'll use your preference history. So if I type in F, it's automatically going to bring up Firefox. But if I type L, it's going to probably bring up Flash. And if I type FLAS, And the more letters I fill in, it'll keep that application there unless there's a duplicate application of the same name. For instance, if I'm typing in FLA, it might switch over to Flash Player at some point, so I don't have to go all the way over to filling out Flash Player. Or I can use the arrow keys as I'm typing in the application that I'm desiring. Like if I type in C, it'll automatically bring up my Citrix viewer. But if I wanted something like, I don't know, another application that starts with a C, I can press the arrow key down and it'll start going down the list, again, starting with my preference history and then going alphabetically. So I found Quicksilver has been phenomenal and easy for me to use. What's nice is it'll start off by going out and mapping all the applications in your application directory and your utilities directory, and you can add other directories on top of that. When you add a new application, it's pretty smart about filling that in for you automatically. The only glitch I've ever seen is if you have, like, for instance, when I was trying out Firefox 1.5, I had 1.0 whatever on my system, and I had 1.5 on my desktop. And sometimes, you know, if I clicked on the 1.5 on my desktop, that would boost it up a little higher in the Firefox in Quicksilver preferences. So therefore, I had to be careful, because if I didn't want to run 1.5 and I wanted to run the one that was in my applications directory, I had to watch where it was actually launching it from. And you know, that's kind of the exception. It's few and far between. Most of the time, you're not going to have to worry about that. But you could do a whole lot of other things with Quicksilver. But I'm more interested in just having it launch my applications, because it is crippling now. When I go back and use a OS X machine that does not have Quicksilver on it, that I have to actually go through the hard drive and the Finder until I find the application I want to run, double click on it. It's painful to me. But Quicksilver, two thumbs up. Now, what I've done, because Quicksilver has impressed me so much, is I've kind of taken a little bit of that functionality and applied it to the Linux systems I use. Most desktop managers, window managers, have some form of run feature or run command. Fluxbox has a FB run. Window Maker has a run command. KDE and GNOME and XFCE all have like a run command. And you can map a key sequence to execute this run command. For instance, in Fluxbox, what I usually do is I have FB keys, and I've written in my FB keys RC file, mod 1 space is mapped to colon exec command with a capital C and then space FB run. So that's mod 1, that's mod with a capital M, and then space, and then the word space spelled out, space, space, colon exec, command with a capital C, that's one word, and then space FB run. And restart a Fluxbox from the menu option, and you're good to go. What's nice about the Fluxbox FB run is that it has command completion as if you were at the bash shell. So I could be typing something in, hit the tab key, and it'll complete it in. If I hit the tab key again, it'll go to the next thing in alphabetical order. So that's pretty sweet. I really, really like that. Window Maker, you can do the same thing. I'm not going to spell this command out. It's going to be in my notes. You could use the Window Maker conf utility to easily create this shortcut key, or you could actually manually put it in your configuration files. People that use XFCE, KDE, GNOME, you can do the same thing. KDE, just edit your shortcut keys menu, map whatever keystroke you'd like to have. Again, for me, it's Alt space is what I really like to use. Alt space, and that'll work. Now, I forgot to mention under OS X, for people who are using Tiger. Now, Quicksilver has, as far as I know, has always defaulted to Apple space for launching Quicksilver and the shortcut and being able to type in for an application. Ever since Tiger came out with Spotlight, the desktop find, that has been, by Apple, has defaulted to mapping it to Apple space also. So, personally, I turn off Spotlight because I never use it. I'm not that, you know, interested in Spotlight, so I just turn that off. And I let the Quicksilver key mappings be applied. So again, on the OS X side, Desktop Manager, Quicksilver, two applications I find invaluable. Now, I want to take a step back to my previous twat, where I had talked about the Linux file system and, you know, what the directories mean and the standards for the Linux file system. And somebody had posted a comment to that twat and a question about what happens if you install a Linux system or any or a FreeBSD system or NetBSD or any kind of Unix system, and you figure out that you didn't allocate enough space for your partition or whatever. How can you move a Linux directory to an or partition to a larger partition? I'm not going to talk about resizing an existing partition. That's an episode in itself. But I want to talk about if you wanted to move a directory or a partition to another partition, how can you do that? And it's actually pretty easy to do. For instance, let's say you've installed Linux on a dual boot machine, and you're running Windows and you're running Linux side by side, and you've allocated 5 gigs to your Linux partition, and that had everything in it. You didn't have a separate home, you didn't have a separate USR or VAR directory, and you just had one big bulldog partition. And later on you realize, man, I'm using the hell out of Linux. Don't use Windows anymore. I don't want it. I'm going to wipe it out. Now, I really like the way my Linux system set up. I wish I could have allocated more space because I'm running out of space. How can I move my home directories? You know, how can I move my home directory onto a separate partition? Because that's what's taking up so much space. How could I move my USR directory to another partition? Because that takes up a lot of space. I'd like to have more space to install my applications and more space for my own personal files. Well, that's pretty easy. If it's going to be on the same disk or if it's going to be on a separate disk, you know, a second disk that you put in there, it doesn't matter. What you got to decide or figure out first what you want to do. If it's something like the home partition and you're logging in as root, you could take that partition. You can do it while you're logged into your existing Linux system. But if you're going to start moving around your VAR partition or any other critical partition, I recommend first, you know, setting up the partitions you want to move to, or, you know, and using a live disk. A NotBix, Damn Small Linux, you know, or a live disk that might have come with your distribution. You can set up the new partitions while you're in your existing Linux, or you can set it up from using the live disk. Once you have set it up, the steps are then pretty simple. Boot with the live disk. Let's go, for instance, you want to move your home directory onto its own separate partition. You use FDisk or CFDisk or your preferred partition utility. Set up a new partition that's going to be your home partition. And you're going to want to format it into your desired file system, Riser, EXT3, JFS, whatever file system you want to use. You're going to format that into your desired file system. And then you're going to create a temporary mount point for it in your MNT directory. Now, you can use an existing directory or a mount point that's in there. For instance, if you have a floppy mount point, which is probably in media, or, you know, you can create a temporary one, like I said, you want to mount that directory in there. And make sure that if you're using a live file system, you're also going to want to mount your the partition that holds the directory you want to move or the contents that you want to move. In this case, we're talking about home. So we want to make sure that, you know, we mount the partition that is holding home on there. So then we're going to use the copy command, which with the dash A switch. Now, the dash A switch for copy is the same as dash DPR. And what that means is no deference. It's not going to follow any links. That means if there was a link from that directory to a file on another part of the partition or on a separate partition, it's not going to follow that link and take that original file. Okay, with using the P option, it's going to no deference, it's going to preserve that link. So the link will still be there. It's not going to take that original file. The P option is to preserve permissions. So that file that gets copied is going to have the same permissions that it had in its original location to its destination. And then the R switch is recursive, so that it's going to start in the directory you start in, and it'll recurse into subdirectories. So it'll take all those subdirectories too. So what you do is you mount your existing partition where the data is, and then you mount your destination partition in a different location, and you use the copy CP-A, and you the path to the files you want to move. In this case, it would be to the home directory. And then you're going to map, you would actually say to the home directory. And then what I like to do is put an asterisk after it, because say you mounted it on MNT, old partition, and that was your root with home. So it would be MNT, old partition, home, asterisk, slash asterisk. So then it's going to copy all that to your destination directory. Every directory, that every subdirectory that's in there, and every file and subdirectory underneath it, over to the destination partition, preserving the links, preserving the permissions. And once it's all said and done, you're going to have to go in into your original root partition, and you're going to have to edit your fstab table, and you're going to have to tell it that there is a new partition, that you have actually, you know, moved root. It's, you're going to have to create a separate entry for root in there. For instance, on mine, I have my separate home partition on hard drive A3. So my fstab says, in addition to root, which is hard drive A2, I have dev hard drive A3, which gets mounted under slash home. The partition type, which in file system type, which in my case is ext3, and then my options, which I have set for defaults, and then the dump and the pass options in there too. I have 0 and 2. So then, to be on the safe side, to make sure everything worked out the way you wanted to, what you want to probably do is move the old home directory on your original root partition to a new name using the move command, mv home to home.bkup. Then you're going to want to make a new directory in your root partition, mkdir, and call it home. So make a new home directory, because when fstab goes to mount the new home partition, it's going to need a mount point on your root partition. So you got to have that mount there, that mount point, which would be a home directory. Now, what you can do, all right, I don't advise doing this, but if you didn't move your existing home directory, because remember, it's still there on the original partition, we just copied it to the new one, all that information is still under there. If you didn't move it, what'll happen is you will still mount your new home partition on top of that directory, but the original contents you won't see. You'll see the new partition, but those original contents will still be there. If you unmount the new home partition, you'll then regain access to the existing files on the original home directory that was on your root partition. So they're not gone. They're not going to get overwritten. You just won't be able to access them when your new root partition has been mounted. That's why I recommend moving your old home directory to a new name. Now, you could actually do the moving of the home directory while you're logged into your existing system that you want to move it from, as long as you're logged in as root. You don't want to be logged in as that current user. If you're running processes on your system that execute out of the home directory for another user or something, or if you're on a server, you want to be careful about doing that. That's why you might want to take the machine offline, drop down into single user mode. But you can do that, especially if you're the only one using it. Now, again, you could do the same procedure for any other partition or directory on your root partition, but I recommend using a live CD to do that. One of the more important cases, that if you actually are going to take an existing Linux, entire Linux system, if you're going to move your root directory to another partition using that process, or for instance, say you wanted to move your existing system from a smaller hard drive to a larger hard drive with a lot more space, you can follow that same procedure. Again, you'd have to use the CP-A command for every separate partition that you've had. For instance, if you had a separate root, a separate home, a separate var partition, you're going to have to do that same process, create those three new partitions on the new drive, copy them over separately, each individual partition, and then you'll be good to go. You could, if you wanted to, mount your old root and then mount the old USR and home directories underneath the old route in their proper locations, and then mount the new route and the new USR and new home under the new route in their proper locations, and just use the cp-a command. But you might find it easier to just do them separately. A little caveat there, you don't want to copy over the contents of a proc directory, which you won't see if the system's not live, or most likely in newer distributions, newer releases, you're not going to want to copy the contents of the dev directory from the old root to the new root. These are usually created automatically at boot time through UDev or your hot plug system. Again, you need to do that with a live CD. But what you're going to have a problem with is now, once you have gotten those partitions copied over, okay, you have not made that new disk bootable. So you've moved the root partition. You've copied over the configuration files. There is nothing in that new root partition that or in the new boot sector that points to where you've moved root or points to the new root if it's on a new hard drive. So you're going to have to initialize your bootloader, be it Lilo or Grub, after you have moved your root partition to take into account that you have moved it. Again, if it's just a simple moving it to a new hard drive, the partition structure is the same for if your root partition was on HDA2 or SDA2 on your old drive and you've moved it to a new drive and it's on the same partition, all you got to do is reinitialize your bootloader. Now, if you're using your existing disk that already had the bootloader installed, most likely, both Lilo and Grub, if that's your bootloader, will allow you to pass the root parameter to your booting kernel. So you could just say, the root's on the new location, and then you'll boot into the new system and make sure that you edit your Grub or Lilo configuration, refresh Lilo or Grub, and then you should be good from then on. Or you could boot off the one of your live CDs and pass the root parameter to the kernel boot process to Lilo or Grub, saying that root equals where your existing root partition is the new one. Once you get into your system, just run Lilo or Grub to reinitialize or refresh it. Now, if you've moved it to another partition that's different than the way you initially had it set up, maybe you moved it to SD1 or SD3 or HD3, A3, you're going to want to edit your Lilo or Grub configuration files, your menu list under Grub, to account for where you have moved the root partition. Those are basically the steps. When you get down to it, it's pretty simple to move your partitions around and to allocate more space for a partition. Again, it's just using cp-a, really easy. Another way that you can do this is you can use tar and with either the gzip or bzip2 and make a backup of that partition, preserving the writes with the p-switch. Make a backup and then extract the backup onto the new partition. You could also use DD if you wanted to copy a partition to another location. The problem with DD is you're going to copy everything from the source location to the destination, including the free space. You're going to copy all that exact partition. You're not going to end up resizing anything. Okay, so it's going to be the same size and same amount of space from the original location as it will be to the destination. That's why generally I just stick with using cp-a. When you're finished with cp-a, you have the original still preserved and the destination. You have it all over there. You can test it out, and if something's gone wrong or something got missed or something got screwed up, you still have the original. Keep the original around for a couple of days, a week or so, to make sure everything's okay, and then delete it. You won't need it anymore. So that's my twat there. Desktop Manager, check it out. Quicksilver, check it out. I'll have all my notes up there on the twat site. And thanks for listening. Have a happy holiday. Don't forget to check us out over at the Linux Link Tech Show, tllts.org, every Wednesday night, live, 8:30 to 10:30 Eastern Time. Have a happy.
It's over.